Good morning, everybody. It is January 17th, 2020, 9:31 a.m., and we're in the public meeting room of the Story County Administration Building, budget work session for FY21 for the Auditor's Office. I think you probably already heard this, but I'll go through it quickly. The board's primarily responsible to fund mandated services. We also fund numerous other important services. So the reason for the budget sessions is for you to give us the best information on your budget right now and help us prioritize the best use of taxpayer funds. It's your opportunity to explain the value to Story County residents of the various items in the request. We're going to ask you to first address the expenditures and then revenues and then a new position request. Revenues, then expenditures.
Okay.
Get that backwards. Thank you, Lucy.
Yeah.
And then.
Yes.
Like revenues first. And then lastly, you have a request for a new position. Remember what was in the directions about lowering expenses and streamlining operations whenever possible and not increasing operating expenses over what you've had before or what is known. And in exchange for you doing that responsible budgeting, our board commits that if you have unanticipated expenses during a fiscal year, bring those to us, explain the justification, you know, why you didn't know it, you know, why it happened, and we'll do our best to find the funds to meet anything that looks like it would be over budget. And new staff likely not be considered unless there's a clearly demonstrable need and a cost-benefit analysis, which produces a positive benefit for the county, and you've presented that information about the proposed new position, and that'll be a good discussion to have. If we don't get through the request today, I guess we would schedule a callback, but I don't see that would be necessary, particularly if we're all really efficient in our questions, responses, explanations, et cetera, and I know we will be. So. I'm going to ask the other supervisors if they have anything they would like to say. I know Supervisor Olson does.
Well, Lisa and Lucy, have heard it through everyone. This is the last work session. So when Lisa Markley did her initial fiscal year 21 calculations, she found that the anticipated revenue, as stated at that point, if there were no additional tax askings, was about $3 million short of what the requests were. Now, that doesn't include pulling money from any special funds like conservation or anything like that, so maybe it's about $1.6 million as far as type of new money requests there. And you all have been through this budget cycle before, so you know that where we start and where we end up are two different places. Thank you.
Welcome this morning, but I do have a question for our chair. Do we need to do introductions this morning to be on the record?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's the second time you've caught me on that. I don't know why I'm here right by it.
But you got me here.
Thank you very much. Okay, for the record, since we're recording, Linda Merkin, Chair, Board of Supervisors.
Sandra Kane, Director of External Operations and County Services.
Laura Solson, Board of Supervisors.
Lisa Heddens, Board of Supervisors.
Alyssa Wignall, Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources.
Lisa Markley, Assistant Auditor.
Lucy Martin, Auditor.
Kevin Norris, Deputy Auditor.
Rhonda Sykes, Deputy Auditor, Real Estate.
Okay, thank you, everybody. And Lucy, if you'd like to run us through your budget.
Sure, if I can take 1 minute at the beginning just to thank my staff. I think you're all very aware of what Lisa Markley does for the county in terms of finances and our accounts payable, which is both claims and payroll, and obviously shepherding us all through the budget process. Thank you. But I also have with me today Kevin Norris. He's my deputy of elections, and he does an excellent job. We were fortunate to first came into Story County from Montgomery County, so he had already some very good experience, and we were able to capitalize on that. And then Rhonda Sykes, the real estate deputy. We would not have a budget without real estate. I always like to say real estate keeps the lights on around here, but she's the one that runs the valuation report, which all entities base their budgets on. So really important jobs that all three of my staff do, and they also make me look good. But also my staff that's not here, I mean, they come in every day and work very hard for Story County, and I'm eternally grateful for that. So with that, I'll go through my revenue budget really quickly. We are not a revenue-generating office, and most of our revenues are basically offsets of expenses that you will see on the expenditure side. Miscellaneous, we have a high three-year average because we used to have fiscal agency fees in there. That's been moved down to its own line item. Elections-related invoicing, so voter lists, these are unpredictable, so we'll probably go a little higher than that in FY21, but you can see we reestimated 20 up, but it's basically a placeholder there till we know what's going to get. That would be people that get sort of a daily absentee list or voter list, and then Kevin's actually runs those and sends those out to people. So it really depends on interest. These are also available from the Secretary of State's office, so they might not opt for Story County. So under city elections, this was the first year we had a city school combined election, but we did use this line item to show the cost of the Ames runoff that we had in December. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the three-year average is based on when we had a standalone city election, so that would account for differences that you see there. Special elections, this is probably really the most volatile of numbers that we have. I've been with Story County for 15 years. Only one year did we not have any special elections. So, but that could be one special election. That could be five special elections. So this is just an offset. Special elections, for the most part, are billed out to those entities. But if the county is a special election, or when we had a special election, District 46, that's a cost that's borne by the county. So that number you will see is just sort of all over the place. We generally keep that $15,000 in there, and then Lisa will amend that to match our expenditures and our costs as they happen. City school election, this was the first year we had our combined election. I think we did a good job of predicting what that would cost. We thought it would look a lot like a primary election, and we weren't wrong in that. So that was... that's our first history that we're going to see on that. And it's the first time you're going to see this line item in our revenue budget. As well.
So did it save money?
For some entities, yes. For some entities, it costs a lot more. So you have some economies of scale because you're taking something that happened on two different days and happened on one day. Mm-hmm. However, the number of ballot styles significantly went up. So then that's a cost in terms of staffing that we have at the polling place. The number of polling places went up because we used to consolidate those polling places for the most part. So just for instance, Nevada School District used to use one polling place, and then now they are bearing the cost of like 10 polling places. They don't bear the complete cost, but they bear a portion of those costs.
Okay.
So it's really hard to do apples to apples on this one. Election costs themselves have also gone up, and also certain entities used to open at noon, and that's no longer an option for them, so they're going to see a cost go up just because they're paying for a full day instead of a half day. So I would say in the main, cities were the big winners on this one because they are now, a lot of the smaller cities just had one polling place. They still, and now they're sharing those costs with the school district. School districts that have multiple cities in them, probably their cost, I think, went down a little bit. But school districts where there's only really one city, their costs went up. I mean, Ames School District was, I think, shocked and appalled when they got their bill, even though I said, you know, you really need to plan for this. We don't know what it's going to look like, but it's probably going to cost more. But it actually looks a lot like their bill was almost identical to what it looked like before I was allowed to use vote centers for school elections when we used to open 19 precincts for Ames School District. Mm-hmm. So their 2011 bill is a lot like their 2019 bill. And in between that time, we were able to combine polling places. So nobody ever called me up and said, thanks for saving us $10,000. I didn't make the papers. But when the cost went back up to what it was,
And maybe I was looking at, you know, the revenues part of it, because if you look at 2017, the combined city and school is almost 83,000 as opposed to 62,000 estimated this year.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's just, if you do something on one day instead of 2 days, you don't have some savings. But who actually had those savings is not necessarily, it wasn't a one-to-one.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail behind that then in terms of the individual.
Right.
So no offense.
I will say I think probably voters like it. I don't know that the entities are going to be getting used to that and budgeting for that, but voters are always saying, like, why do we do this twice kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there was a good reason for doing it twice, but
here we are.
Well, I'm not crying over spilled milk or anything.
Here we are.
This is the world we live in.
Thank you for that. I appreciate
sure.
it.
Flat books. So flat books have been sort of kind of a victim of our own success, because so much stuff is now available online, either what we do or things like Google Maps and just sort of online search things like whitepages.com. So we did notice that we get a lot of foot traffic in a general election year, so we decided, we used to do this every year, we decided to go every other year. So that's why you see a real difference between like a three-year average and our estimate for FY20. We didn't do a new book this year. We're planning to do one for FY21. And we use our up-to-date data. We pull from our real estate database. We pull from our GIS files so that we can stand by that data. There are companies that do this, but they pull their data much, much less frequently than we do. And things like, you know, several annexations in cities do not get captured in the data, and then people think it's our mistake. So those are still available to people. I'm not trashing them. I just think our product is more up to date, and it's something that I can vouch for when people come in to buy it here. So that's what we choose to retail at the county level.
We sell those at cost.
Right, so we're not allowed to make money off of that.
I didn't realize
that. Yeah, so whatever they cost us is what we sell them for. And it's been about $22, I think, is that right? Something like that. So people really like them, older people especially.
Thank you, Lucy. Hold to it for me.
I was waiting for that.
I still like paper books. I still read paper books. You know, I still like to hold the book. And I actually got like a map, like one of those like Rand McNally maps to put in the car. And my husband's like, well, we have Google. You know, we have our. I'm like, yeah, but what if we're in the mountains and you don't have a signal? And this way I don't have to. This way I can look big picture. So paper.
Which is common here in Ireland. Being in the mountains.
But it's for travel.
It's when we're over in the bluffs area.
I don't know. This mountain's in Surrey County. All right. Maps and discs. This is really dependent on what people want to get. We do retail our maps. That's always a custom order. We try to turn those around in 24 hours. We usually see an uptick in those in a big election year when candidates are canvassing door-to-door, or especially some of the bigger campaigns that bring in people that are not necessarily local. They like the maps as well. And I think that all gets charged a third, right?
Yeah.
Too. So the funding goes into the maps. So we get a third of that.
And county assessor gets a third, and city assessor
gets a third. So because we all contribute to that data. So that's more of a placeholder number right now. I'm sure it will be reestimated at budget time next year to reflect reality of what we go through in, say, August, September, October. Fiscal agent fees. So we are the fiscal agent for both the mental health region and for Boost. So you can CITS is $12,800 a year, and Boost is $1,800 a year.
Approximately. So Boost is a 3%. We get 3%.
We renegotiated down when they started losing funding. So 3% is what we get on that fiscal agent fee. CICS is actually $1,000 a month plus expenses. So, which is what Madison County was getting, and so we just
we kept that the same.
That the same.
It may be revisited in future years, not this year though. And then photocopy, fax fees, those numbers have been going down. We used to do more of that now anymore, and a lot of that is for mapping information or plat maps that we mark up. So we usually just scan those and email them, and we don't charge for that. So some if people get paper, then that's a quarter, and then I think fax is 50 cents. I know Marv is really trying to get the county to get away from fax machines altogether, but I'm statutorily required to accept things by fax, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. So, but we can also, at the same time, fax people things if they ask for that. But that's pretty dated technology from a customer standpoint, so it's almost always a scanned a PDF that we send. And, again, that's not a charge. So. Most of our transactions in the auditor's office are a quarter, and even those are going down. I would say. So that is all I had for revenue. Did you have any questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Just a general overview as we go into expenditures. Because we are going into general election year and because the county bears the cost of that, and we only have a general election every 2 years, our expenditures aren't flat. You know, they're really spiky. And just another thing to consider about a general election is, first of all, the code says it costs what it costs. So we try to get we try to estimate as closely as we can, and I think we've gotten pretty good at that. But also, if I put in a number here and we exceed that, that's what we're going to pay. So we're not allowed to cap those costs in any way. We are allowed to pay for that for the general election out of the supplemental fund. And so every time I have a general election, I offer that up to the board if they want to shift those costs to that fund. That is a possibility, and it's something that we discuss as we go into every odd number fiscal year, but even number calendar year. So there is a line item for that, but there are also costs associated with that. And so if you look at both my extra help and my overtime, hire a lot of temporary workers to help us with the influx of both voter registration and absentee ballot requests, and also to test and pack all our equipment and support our precincts on election day.
I used, when I was making my comparisons, rather than use the three-year average, I used the 17 and 19 figures for that reason, and didn't find these unreasonable.
So we have found that we've had to up our hourly wage for those we have really low unemployment in Story County, which is great for the county as a whole, but not so great when you're looking for temporary workers. So, and I know everybody that hires seasonal workers has had the same struggle.
Could we, at the end of the session, and this has helped me remember, let's talk about that shifting election cost to supplemental and what the pros and cons are.
Yeah.
Because I haven't really thought about that before.
Yeah. Absolutely. So any questions on extra help?
Were you just saying, Lucy, I'm sorry, that you, the figures that you have in here, you would like to increase that, or is it already increased?
No, if you see any increase over time, we have the 18, I think, is when we up the hourly wage.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
thanks.
That we still struggle to fill those positions, and we don't have, especially on the technician side, the number of people that we would really like to have. But we take what we can get and work around the rest.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And one thing that this will be the second general in which the time frame is shortened down to 29 days.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
From the 40.
From the 40,
which
presses are working.
Yeah, as Chris Amaya says, it's like putting your thumb on the hose, and you know that way, we're doing the same amount of stuff, but just in a smaller time frame, and that's also post election as well. We have fewer days to turn around the paperwork from that. So I know if you've ever gone over to the auditor's office when we're in a full general election swing, it looks pretty crowded and there's a lot of people on paper, but it makes sense when you understand it all.
Sure.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Lucy, and I know we're going to talk about the positions separately, but so I'm going to try to keep this limited to just these extra help will occur whether or not we fund that extra position, correct? Because
yes.
Those are all people that have to be brought in a
right.
short period of time.
Right. It's, okay. It's to process that volume of paperwork that we get. And actually... because of the heightened security measures, there are certain things that I use, temps or even election workers, before that I'm not allowed to do that anymore. I have to go to staff. So that, we try to bring in extra help for whatever we can put on them for a temporary period of time. But there are just certain things that we're not allowed to give to a temporary person.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense, either from a managerial or like a legal standpoint, I would say.
Okay.
I was going to go down to overtime if we're ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So overtime, I have a lot of my staff has been here a goodly amount of time and is maxed on, vacation. So the choice, for comp or overtime, usually in a big election year, if people have the years in, they will choose the overtime. So we'll see a spike there. Some people still choose comp time, but I have some statutory Saturdays, and then we try to use the temps so we keep a cap on the overtime. But we'll always have some overtime. We just cannot predict exactly. A lot of the paperwork that we process has you have to turn around in a day. So if we have a busy day, you have to process that. If we have a slow day, and I would like to say that when Kevin's been here, he's been great about if we don't need to do OT, we don't do OT. But when we do need to OT, it's battle stations for everybody. So and that's just a day to day. Did you have something?
Just that it also fluctuates with the amount of positions we get for satellite building sites, which we have no control over.
Right.
As far as the sites that we have to make up on.
Right, and we try to anticipate that and offer up enough sites to. To sort of block lower the amount of petitions that we get, but. You just never know. You never know when mail is going to be more popular than walk-in voting. I feel like I choose wrong every time. it's whatever happens, it happens, and we deal with it. It's our best estimate. I think we are good at estimating, but we're also there's always one thing in every big election that we didn't predict.
Mm-hmm.
So. Or hopefully just one thing. So that's what I had to say about OT. And then I could go down to office supplies from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and then just the budget, the expenditure budget is split into election administration and then managerial administration. So you'll see the same lines. You'll see some pretty big costs this year on the election side. So this is for basically supplies and billings for election-related material. So voter registration processing, envelopes, paper, supplies. This is pretty much in line with our average. We try to keep enough supplies on hand that we don't have to make huge purchases, but we also... The law changes, and then we have to change things on our pre-printed things. So, just for example, I think the Secretary of State's office in this past calendar year sent us two separate items about voter ID that were, by the time we actually had an election, the law had changed or there'd been a lawsuit and they were no longer viable. So you don't want to print too much stuff in advance because then you end up throwing it out, which makes everybody crazy, except, I guess, the printers. So we have a lot of binders that we can reuse, but the insides are no good. And then we also pay for our national change of address mailing out of this, and that's an annual thing that we do to... I know you see probably a lot of national stories about somebody's registered in two places or da-da-da-da-da. So this, we're always chasing those people. That doesn't mean they're voting in two places, but a lot of times people don't clean up their registration, and this is one way to do that, is to send it. We send it to both addresses, and then they sign a card and send it back to us to say, yeah, this is my address or this is not my address. So we try. There's a lot of chasing of voters. There's a lot of postage involved in that as well. But
and it's a university town, so that means that we have a whole lot of people that register and then aren't there 2 years later.
So, but it's helpful. The Secretary of State actually does that mailing and then bills us for that. If we get the we pay for the return mail. So. Election supplies and forms, there's a lot of relation with that to office supplies, but that's where we get our absentee envelopes, our precinct supplies, our voter forms. We have gone over time from the big flat mailing down to a letter size. The law changed where we can send fewer envelopes than we once did. I'm going back like over my 15-year tenure in the office here. And then Kevin has worked with the post office to get our intelligent mail barcode system, that we do that in-house as well. So, and we could do that with we do that with like a label, so we didn't have to pre-print that. So then if there are changes, we can make changes to that. So that was very helpful. So thank you, Kevin, for that. Again, it's not really, if you look at our, it's pretty in line with what we've used spending. And that can go up or down if there are big changes and we have to repurchase things and pulp old versions of envelopes. Uniforms and equipment, shirts for staff. We mostly just wear our badges now, but we do have all of our techs wear T-shirts. So they're going out to a site. They do have a Story County badge that they wear, but oftentimes it's dark, and so we like to brand them with Story County. And I don't know if we need to buy these, but if we do, sometimes sizes, they wear out over time, or sizes are not appropriate for our actual people. So.
Where staff is big.
There we go.
Never.
Marketing, I didn't put anything in. I do have display materials for that I've had. I bought some, both some smaller form holding stands, and also some bigger ones that you can put posters in. And so I will deploy those when I need to. And we usually do all of our printing in house. Matt Boyd, JS, is really he can do some big banner printing for us. So. I didn't put anything in that this year because I still have, that's physical equipment that doesn't go bad. It's not, it's just a physical thing to put stuff in. Because now the stuff inside goes bad all the time, but it's pretty useful. Postage and mailing. We do use a bulk mailing rate for our election-related material. We have a lot of mandated mailings that we do. So this is our best guess for what it's going to cost us.
It's not particularly tied to a general election year.
Well, yeah, not necessarily. Okay. And then I think this year we did our we had to do a we didn't do a countywide mailing, but we did a householded mailing to about the polling place change for the combined election. So we saved some money on that by both householding the mailing because it was not tied to people's registration. So, and then so we didn't have to pay for a return mail, but they returned it anyway. So I think that number's gone down a little bit because it doesn't include that county. We had a countywide mailing in our budget for this year, which we sort of a countywide. It was more of a household and thing that we.
The question that I heard was, does this not fluctuate with the general election?
Yes.
This
is the exception. 18 was not a general election year, and it was much lower.
We charge all of the general election-related mailing, absentee mailing. Mailing that we do, we're going to charge that to the general election line item.
Okay.
So this mailing has to do with elections, but
it's not election specific. Thank you.
Yeah. Voter
registration.
Okay. We usually have a big uptick in voter registration general election year, but and caucus will bring us. That'll be hit this year, but. We try to charge our general election fees to the general election line item, but we do postage and mailing all the time. So,
Thank you.
Employee mileage and expenses. So, this is just that reimbursement. You know, when people go out, and especially this happens on during an election, where say Scott has to go deliver things or. Patty runs to a precinct in the middle of the day, things like that. I use everybody.
this is going to be used very randomly because we're going to charge most mileage to the general election line item so that we can see a true picture of what the general election costs.
Communication services. So I have 3 phone lines for my election staff and then the we have jetpacks for election use, but those will get billed when they get turned on, so they're not on all the time. And this again is pretty in line with our average. We haven't seen real changes there. Education training. I think 8 of the 10 of us are SEAT certified. That is a statewide certification for our election administration. And then Kevin is CIRA certified, which is a national certification. Historically, when he was getting certified, my numbers are a little higher. Now we're in a continuing education phase. It's a little lower than our 3-year average there. So. But that has been really helpful. I know, so Rhonda is our real estate deputy, but she's SEAT certified because I work her like a rented mule during election season. And also she is pretty much primarily in charge of satellite sites when we go out. So it's really helpful for everybody. Even the people that have been here for a long time and really understand the process, SEAT has given them the context that they didn't have. You know, a lot of times it was like just, and Alyssa probably, you know, she knows how to process an absentee voter, but she might not know the code behind it. I'll use you if I need to. You should hide.
She's got notice now.
So we find education training, it's really helpful. When we have a big election year, we have fewer training sessions for SEAT. And they've also lowered the number of hours to recertify. I actually sit on the SEAT board, so we've moved some of our training to online training. And the auditor's office don't have time to do a lot of training during general election year, so probably see a dip there as well. I think CIRA has been really helpful for Kevin. He's come back. He always has really good ideas, but he talks to his counterparts from around the nation. And then we always feel better about Story County, too. But it's interesting. We both read a daily digest about election stuff. And he's like, oh, that's my friend Adrian from, like, Maricopa County, Arizona. And I was like, oh, I'm glad I'm not Adrian because what does he have, like 4 million voters just in his jurisdiction? Which is, that's just one county in Arizona. So that's a lot of work. Questions on education and training? Equipment rent and maintenance. We have a lot of election specific software that we use. So this includes our EasyVote, which is a poll worker maintenance database that we use, 10X, which is our new electronic poll books that you approved in last year's budget and that we first used in the special election for the Healthy Life Center. Is that when we first used them? That's been a really successful migration from one entity to another. So we have those 10X and then 10X Live, which is our how we monitor election activity on election day, and also is that that's not the election results, or is that the election results portion?
No, it's where we get the election day after the election is wrapped up. This is the same software that we use to get all this reports. We can actually download signed copies of
eligibility slips
or completed forms for election day registration. We just pull it all in together in this one software.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very helpful to manage it.
Yeah. The biggest nut in this line item is our maintenance on our election equipment. So that's a little over $40,000. So, and that's we have two pieces of equipment in every precinct. We have 43 precincts, and we do that through our vendor, Henry Atkins. They come out and they actually come on site to do the maintenance.
So that's not included in this year's budget. That's in the next year's. At 40.
No, it's in this year's too.
Yeah, sorry. The election equipment is a different thing than the
test. Yeah, sorry.
This no, is separate from maintenance.
The very
first year we got the equipment, I should probably take that line item out of my narrative there. That was
this year, not next year. I was thinking this meant the
Yeah.
We're talking about two different systems.
Yeah, right.
That's on
this is our unit and equipment.
The tabulators and
The OB.
Oh, that's equipment.
This is the problem. And it's easy for me to see that that's two different things, but probably not to the uninitiated person that doesn't look at this all the time. So.
No, I got it. Thanks.
But I just wanted to say that, we have maintenance on all of our various equipment, but the biggest is for our election budget.
Mm-hmm.
Primary election, we do not have a primary election in FY21. We do have a primary election in FY20, and we think $65,000 is a good expenditure number to have in there. You know, we try to get it in. It was 61 2 years ago. For general election, we're estimating $125,000. Which is a little up from previous, but again, if we exceed that, we pay for that. So we try to anticipate every cost that we can think of when we come to that $125,000. I'm relying on Lisa's analysis here, Kevin's analysis, my own analysis. We all agree that was a good number to estimate at this point in time.
Would election security be reflected in that amount?
Election security?
Yes. All aspects.
Okay.
All aspects.
Yeah, it's just, are you talking about cybersecurity?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of, it's not something that you can pull out as a, it's sort of larded into everything that we do at this point in time. I will be looking at, we do have an election security policy in Story County, and I will be looking at that this fiscal year just to see if I need to make any changes to that to reflect changes that we've seen legislatively. Office equipment and furniture, this is where we bought our poll books from, so that's why you see a huge re-estimated expense there.
No, a huge decrease because...
Yeah, no, but in FY20.
Right.
Yeah. So, otherwise, we aren't anticipating any... that's just more of a placeholder if we need to buy something from the election side. We're not anticipating anything major at this point in time. City elections, all that is just an offset you will see against our revenues there. That was the runoff for Ames Ward 4. So you see that re-estimated number in FY20. Special elections, again, we just budget the same as we do for our revenue.
So we budgeted 10 for the current year, and we're re-estimating it to 36.9 because that's how many we're assuming we're going to have. So.
And then city school election, we don't have one in FY21, and our re-estimated amount, $60,000. Do we want to change that?
No, that's exactly. We spent 59.8.
Okay.
Bill out. We can bill out a few more things. We can bill out our temporary help and things like that, our tech. So the revenue of 66 actually is exactly, well, that's exactly what I think he billed out, is 66,000, yeah. And 6,000 of that was basically
in other line items, expenditure
other,
wise.
Yeah.
That's it for local elections, unless you had any questions there. Now we get into our administrative side. Which is the bulk of my staff, but I guess is we're pretty low key. Overtime pay from that is almost entirely for drainage meetings. So when Scott has a night meeting, that would come out of there. That's really close to our what we re-estimated and what we budgeted for is really close to our 3-year average. Office supplies, our general office supplies, plus things that only the auditor's office has, like transfer books and minute books and plat books and tax forms, things like that. That all comes out of this line item. So it's a little higher
for plat books.
And that includes the $2,000 that we do for the plat books that we sell at cost. Mm-hmm. So... So if you see, like, we re-estimated 20 at 7, and then next year is 9, that's the 2,000 is the flat books are in there.
I did have a note that was a little high, and when you said something additional, that answers my question. Thanks.
Postage and mailing, so this includes our claims, anything related to the minutes, W-2s, 1099s, and our drainage levies. Very similar to our average, and we're not looking for any change between FY20 and FY21. Employee mileage and expenses, again, this is when employees use their personal vehicles, more of a placeholder number there. Probably won't be $100, but could be. Communication services, this pays for eight phone lines. No change there over the years or over the average. Education and training, this is anything that's related to county government, budget and finance, real estate, payroll, or GIS. The bulk of this is usually Scott. We send him to the ESRI conference every other year. And then I try to get Lisa and Rhonda and her staff to any training that we can. It's not always easy to find relevant trainings. Sometimes there's good ones, sometimes there's not. Sometimes ISAC has good sessions that are applicable, especially with the changes in the budgeting law, things like that Lisa can go to and her staff. And we really appreciate that Alyssa's department has offered in-house training for employees. I think that's been really popular with my staff, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Equipment written and maintenance. The board very kindly had us paid for us to digitize some of our real estate records, and we have some hosting fees there, which we're going to share with the recorder. That is gone live, but we're still, and Stacy is working hard on it, and then she's trying to get waving frantically at me to get my attention so that we can get this done. But we shared that hosting fee with the recorder's office. And then we have our copier lease in there, and that's $325 a month for our copier. And which you know when that breaks down, because then we come over and use your copier, which we try not to do. But usually it coincides with like a big election.
Yeah. No, it hasn't.
Hasn't happened lately.
I was thinking that when I was running the budget stuff, I'm like, wow, we have a...
This copier is more reliable than the last one.
But we have a reliable one, too.
Yeah. Contract labor, this is where I want to talk to you about, and this is really just a placeholder number. I actually got accurate figures late yesterday afternoon from the vendor. So this is would be to digitize the board's minute books. I just put it in here as a really as a conversation to have. Shelley and I attended a demonstration by Arcanet, who came, the vendor actually came down to Stacy's office, reporter's office, and I think minute books is what they sort of specialize in. It sounds like Arcanet doesn't want to go forward with the reporter's proposed project, but is still interested in the minute books here. They do a lot of work in Minnesota. I think if you're going to go down to Spring School at ISAC, they'll probably be there if you want to talk to them. The estimates I got yesterday afternoon, so to have them come on site and do the digitization would be $21,000, and to have them take the books off site would be like $17,000, and then annual maintenance would be about $1,600 a year. So something to think about. I think it is a really nice product. I saw digitized records they've done for several counties and municipalities in Minnesota. To be very frank, I was hoping to ride on the reporter's coattails and have her do a lot of the sort of face-to-face interaction with the vendor and just have me sign some contracts. I mean, I think it's a good thing for the county to think about when we digitize our real estate records. It's a disaster recovery as well. These are permanent records of the county. These are one-of-a-kind books.
Do we have anything off-site for minutes?
We do. If you go back from like about 2006 on, we have Shelley has every year gone basically on a thumb drive.
So if there's an emergency, we're getting Shelley's drawer, grabbing the thumb drive.
Yeah.
Grabbing a drink,
I was going to say
the map,
thumb drive here. Okay.
No, it's in her desk drawer. So
we don't have off-site storage of any kind of minutes.
Well, they back up.
But they're backed
up.
They're back on the G drive. Those are backed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think those go back from about 2006.
So they back up everything.
Previous to 2006.
Well, I'm talking about the historical books.
Yeah.
And it is a nice product. It was a very nice, crystal clear, easily searchable product.
So it's a $1,600 the annual hosting fee.
Yes. And that's unlimited users. So
it seems like that it's searchable. Having backup is good, but the searching ability is what we lack now. We have some forms of backup for recent, just through automation, but we don't
go
have
on the edge drive and search. It's just cumbersome, I think.
Yeah, it's cumbersome. Not everything is like, those are Word files. I mean, these would be basically images that are OCR'd, and then you can do like those Boolean searches. I'm going to throw out words that sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Could you restate those numbers again that you said? So it was $21,000
for them to come on site and digitize them here, which would be my preference. Mm-hmm. These are one-of-a-kind books. I don't care how bonded the vendor is. If they disappear or the truck catches on fire, that's not coming back.
Gotcha.
And I'm the keeper of the permanent records, so I take that seriously.
So it'd be 17,000 if they take them off site, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it wasn't, okay. It wasn't as big a difference as I thought it was going to be. So I think their preference is to take them off site. They don't have to travel with equipment. If you remember when COT was here, they had big machines in our room. Those were basically giant cameras that they used. This is similar, but they actually take a book, open it, and it's like they press it up against the glass from underneath,
mm-hmm.
and then they take the image from that. So they flatten it out. It's pretty cool technology.
And then the maintenance was how much a year?
About $1,600 a year.
Okay.
Hosting fee. Basically.
It's hosting fee. It's unlimited users. And technical support with tutorials about how to use the system, things like that.
So after they had scanned all the existing records, how did the new minutes get in?
That's a good question that I don't know. This is the
okay.
Well, and the minutes are in two different forms. Like right, the minutes that are printed on the pages and put in the mm-hmm. books, that's the official record for Story County. So how you go forward from that, I don't know. That's a good
send them
question.
A very, very good photocopy and they do it off site. That would be cheap and easy.
Or we'd be allowed to digitize our own thing.
Yeah.
And say, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a question.
But it's not an additional fee above the hosting fee.
I don't know.
Okay.
So
I'll quit asking questions.
No, it's okay. those are all good questions that I would like to ask as well.
Well, I think it sounds really interesting in terms of being able to search.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've asked somebody, can you listen to this or can you go here and search some things to find something? And that's just
covered.
Another
that's not a use of staff time.
Another question to ask is, does the auditor's office have time in FY21 to take on this project?
Oh.
Which is why I wanted to jump on Stacy's project. Because so the first half of FY21, I can tell you straight up, I won't have time for this, and Shelley will be at the satellite sites with Rhonda. Right? So So the second half of FY21 is a possibility.
Yes.
I think I would like to talk to the vendor about maybe splitting this up over two fiscal years, potentially. I don't know. I just wanted
this
to...
This occurred, a week before budgets were due?
Yeah.
Or less.
So I just...
So there wasn't a lot. She just was like, let's put this into talking about. So...
Okay.
But the searchability of it is really attractive, as is the disaster recovery portion. Both Shelley and I have gone, and I'm sure, I think all three of you have gone searching in books to find things. I know you have, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that several times, both in terms of sort of perennial issues that come up. A really minor example would be Brett McLean asked how the Veterans Memorial got built here, and so I did. I was actually within the summer I think I had time, but I probably spent 1 to 2 hours just trying to find the whole background
mm-hmm.
there. It was actually built with the granite slabs that were on this building before they added the addition. They took those off and used that to build the memorial with. So,
fun fact to know and tell.
It was.
Yeah.
Those are called spandrels, which I don't think I knew before that time. So I learned a new word and I was all happy.
Well, there's also the fact
but,
that we know.
There's probably things I didn't catch when I looked through those books, mm-hmm. right?
And we also know the books can get borrowed and you have to track them down and find out where they are.
Oh, misfire. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I freaked everybody out. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So I think $21,000 is fair to put in. I was pleased that recently when I asked for some specific minutes, that when Lisa put them on my desk, she said, those will not leave here. Those will not. Have. Please return them as soon as possible. I made my copies and I brought them back. So I think it's well worth the extra $4,000 in the budget.
Yeah, I just don't know, again, the time constraints on my office to do that.
Sure.
That's
so
more
would you like to get it? What I'm hearing is you'd like to get it started, so you'd like to see it in the budget, but you don't know that you would get it all done in 1 year, so maybe the $21,000 estimate could be split between 2 years?
Right. I guess we put in $21,000 right now as a talking point, and then
I don't know if they'll let me split into 2 years. That's something we've successfully done with some of our election vendors, but they're so used to working with auditors and our penny-pinching ways that...
What I get, this is a little different, but when we went with Iowa codification,
yeah,
we could have split it over.
Okay.
It's just the start of the project. So, like,
right,
they'll need, like, 50% down. Typically, you'll see 50% down, and then if it's a huge project...
I think that's what we did with COT, too.
Yeah, as they get a certain percentage complete, they'll bill you and...
Yeah, you can tell from COT, because the COT is in 2 year, fiscal year. So
if you, you know, if you started in March or April, you know, maybe you split it.
You know you would not want to start it till... A couple months after you got the general election all kind of done, would it be, since you have an estimate, could you ask the vendor now? Could we split it among 2 years?
Yeah.
So we could do that for budgeting purposes?
And he's actually going to do a demo for us like in like the third week of February. So
I was hoping you could, here's what I was hoping, that we could make the decision now to put half of it. So we're not looking for all of that money in 21 if we don't need it. Could we just do that now? Put 10 if the vendor says that's workable. Put 10 and 21, and
yeah,
10 and 20, and no, we'd have to the other 10 and 22. I'm just thinking. I'm thinking we also have a staffing request,
right?
And to and we have other staffing requests in other people's budgets.
Yeah, and my understanding is no decisions on that are going to be made until you have a global conversation. About
exactly.
Right.
So we've got about a week.
So.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You could also leave the 15,000 in case there's a more than 50%. I mean, I don't know what their down payment. Their down payment might be.
So
yeah,
if we have somebody come on site, that's when they have people available, is my understanding.
Well, I agree with you on it. And I think we're all saying the on site makes sense. So to work with that 21 out. 1,000 estimate rather than 17 is fine.
I guess I'd like to point out that the total ask this year, the $1.19 million, is down 9% already from the ask from last year. And considering that includes...
Just because we're not buying poll books, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm still thinking along the lines of, you know, we're looking, I mean, we went back to the sheriff and said we'd like you to take down to where you were last year as your starting point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just my thought about with including the 21. I
Except
get what you're saying.
There were some large one-time costs, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying we've got a lot of requests, and one of them is a new position in this office. If we could split that among 2 years, if that's realistic, that helps us out. In about $10,000.
I'm more worried that the whole thing is going to get pushed to 22 if it goes, because just in terms of timing. Just because I know too well how things. So we'll go through general election next year, then we'll go right into budget season. And then all of a sudden it's April, and I'm like, can you come in here? And they're like, well, we can, but not till August. So
you think it's maybe more realistic for 22? I mean,
honestly, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. We're interested.
I
think it's a pretty simple process once it gets started. I would like to say we could start it in FY21 and finish it in FY22. I feel also that knowing what I know about the auditor's schedule, that
it also sounds to me that just doing a phone call to find some additional information might not be as realistic as when they're on site.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of February, where you could get more concrete information, discussions, they can see more what you have.
So at this point in time, I guess the way we can look at it is we're in favor, we want to pursue it. If we don't put money in it in 21, we certainly can in 22. And if we get into next year's budget sessions and we find out that we can start, maybe we can look at using some current funds and putting it in. Half of it.
Oh. Yeah. I really want to do this. I just don't know that I can. When I put it in there again, I thought I would be doing it in tandem with Stacy, who I know does a lot of heavy lifting for me.
Mm-hmm.
It could, because she would have at least more time in the fall than I would too.
And 22, because you just have the city and the school election instead of the general, is easier on your office. I mean, it's still an election, and it's a new...
It's still an election. I think that also the change in city school election to the city school election has pushed more things to the special election cycle.
Okay.
So I think we're going to see a steadier procession of special elections. I mean, we have 5 special elections on March 3rd. Okay. And 3 of those are directly attributable to the combination.
So, Lisa, let me go back to what you just said. Were you saying to just put it all in 22 and try to find the money if we can start it in 21, try to find the money later?
That's what I think makes the most sense.
I'm starting to think it does, too.
Zero.
I mean, I know we're in favor. I know you're in favor of it.
That, and I honestly put it in here so we could talk about it because new. But the more I think about it, the more I think it would be a really good thing for Story County. I just, again, it's more of the timing of it that worries me.
Well, we're in favor, I think.
Yeah.
We're in favor of it. Let's just not put it in here, but we've had the discussion, and if it turns out that you come back later and say, hey, we could get it started,
mm-hmm.
my sense is we're not going to be trying to find the whole 21,000.
Right.
Because it's going to be a 2-year
come to a board meeting project. And talk about it then, and we could talk about things.
Well, that makes a couple things a little easier for us this year, too.
Okay.
So, good.
Dues and memberships, this is our ISACA membership, which is our affiliate through ISAC, the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, which is where I always go when we have random questions about, like, who has bought a time stamper recently? Or how many of your boards of supervisors used to be in secondary roads? There's, like, there's some really good conversations going on. But my colleagues in ISAC are my go-to people. Some really good ones that I think might be retiring this year, so I'll be sad to see them go. Office equipment and furniture, those are, I don't think we've spent anything out of this recently, but that's usually just for replacement chairs. Seems like when our chairs go, they fall to pieces. So I'd like to keep that in there in case I have expenses like that. Mm-hmm. So that's the most. So, any questions on the expenditures?
No.
Okay. So I do have a request for new staff, and this is something that, just to give you a little history, Kevin and I have been talking about it probably for 2 years, if not longer. When we look at Story County, we looked at our comparable counties, I look both at the counties that have universities. Those are both, they both have higher population than we do. They're also physically situated closer to the university populations for which they serve. And we have the largest university population. So I included those in my, included six different counties as comparables. I would say like Dubuque, Woodbury, and Pottawatomie are more like Story County in terms of just overall population. But I included, and then Lynn I included because they are sort of really, they do a lot of technical database analysis type stuff. So I also love the way they have 3 full-time equivalents plus 1 person assigned 83% to elections. And I'm like, where'd you come up with the 83%? This is sort of like an overall trend, sort of these bigger counties. What's happened over time with elections, if I can do a little history, is we went from a real like paper and pencil process that was very pretty static. Back in those days, so like in 1993 is when we went from 12 people in the office down to 11. And that was with the retirement. That's when Scott became the drainage clerk.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of the auditor at the time sort of looked at that retirement, reallocated some duties, and actually increased some salaries at that point in time. And that's when people were using dumb terminals.
And then a lot of stuff was on pencil and paper. I think we were going to, I think IT was still information services at the time. So they were sort of just moving into technology at that point in time. And then we went to an era where a lot of our stuff was done in-house by either information services or became IT. A lot of stuff was on our 400 system. We did everything in-house then. Real estate was in-house. Elections was in-house. Finance was in-house. And we had, like, programmers that actually would go downstairs and talk to them if we had legislative changes. So in 2008, we went from 11 people down to 10. That was when we had been on iVoters for maybe like a year and a half. And that was, so we had just gone through sort of all the HAVA changes on the election side. Going to a statewide database, we were sort of reaping the benefits of that at that time. HAVA also purchased some equipment for us. It was sort of like technology is going to like make elections better, and we're all moving into the 21st century with smiles on our faces. So, in 2008, there was a termination of the office, and that the decision at the time, and I think it was the correct decision, was just we don't need this position anymore. We have statewide support to do certain things. Things are simpler because of technology. And so now we're in today's world where we've now gone to nobody does anything in-house anymore, right? We have vendors, but I basically have an in-house IT person in the form of Kevin, and I'm asking for this position because one day I'm going to go into his cubicle and there'd just be a carbonized hut where there used to be a man. So the duties that are in this description, and thank you, Elizabeth, for working with us on this, are basically things that Kevin does now. And then I think what happens is Kevin does these things, so then I essentially am my own elections deputy. And the big losers here are Rhonda and Lisa, who have to, I essentially function as an extra elections person, which is fine when I'm not in a general election year where I'm also on the ballot. So, we've been able to taper over these gaps, both with the technical expertise that Kevin himself brought to the table, and then me sort of chipping in to cover the blanks that he can't do himself. But, you know, if Lisa has a real important question about the audit, she usually has to, like, basically drag me away. So I have 5 statutory duties. Elections is just one of them, so it should be 20% of my job. But it's basically, like, 95% of my job. And it only works because everybody is so good at what they do now. But that's, you know, Story County shouldn't function. It should function regardless of who's filling the roles. Like, the role should serve the county. I know Rhonda is going to be experiencing shortly, I think, a major retirement in her department. She's probably the person that's going to lose people to retirement first, and then she's going to, you know, we're going to lose institutional knowledge, we're going to have training, so she needs my input on that. So I think both to, and then, you know, Kevin might just think, I can't do this anymore. I'm doing 2 jobs. And Lisa, she's very good at self-functioning, and all my managers should be, you know, operate with little to no supervision. But I feel like the other areas that I'm responsible for are getting short shrift.
Well, you see, where 95% of your time goes to elections. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right. Well, I mean, it depends. It's time.
I mean, you're good at it.
I think you guys are probably a little tired of the minutes coming in, like 2 minutes to the time that you're supposed to review them. You know, that's just a really small example. I don't like that either, but it's like everything gets backburnered until it's absolutely due. And I just feel like auditors are by design pulled in multiple different directions, but I feel like at this point, like all the other directions I should be able to switch gears, and I'm not able to do that. And Kevin should be available to do a lot of the stuff that, but he's so caught up in supporting this technical side. I mean, elections has evolved to the point where you're basically a database manager, a sysadmin, and that's because none of this stuff can be networked or sit on the county. I can't give this to IT because it's illegal to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go into the census here pretty soon. I don't know if we're going to still have 43 precincts, but that's going to be a big time commitment as well, on top of everything else.
Here's an example. So in this period that we're in a heightened cybersecurity, we have three different distinct systems that we utilize in elections. You have voter registration, you have election day voter processing, check-in, and then you have election night reporting. I'm not going to get into the specifics because it wouldn't be prudent for me to do that, but now we have three diverse systems, and that's by design to make it more secure. So we have one of those systems runs on a Microsoft backbone, one of those systems runs on a Linux backbone, mm-hmm. one of those systems run on an iOS or Apple backbone. Mm-hmm. So, and that's by design to make them more secure. Can't talk to each other.
Right.
Well, they can, but we keep them separate so that they don't talk to each other. And then, so if one portion of the system is attacked, then the other two are safe because they're different systems. You know, it's very unlikely that they're going to be attacked simultaneously. So by design, this makes it more secure. It's like we have 99 counties that do 99 elections, or do elections 99 different ways, or we do three different parts of our elections three different ways. So the diversity makes it more secure. But it also makes it very challenging in trying to manage these assets. So. And we have 138 poll pads that we sent out for on election day. We have 90 pieces of actual election equipment, ADA marking devices, and ballot counting tabulators that we sent out. All of these things need maintenance, they need updates. We do have vendor contracts to maintain that stuff. Day-to-day management of those systems and day-to-day updates fall on us. So
I will say Kevin's been, anything we can ship to extra help, anything we can ship to our third-party vendors, mm-hmm. we've done, and that's why we delayed having this conversation with the board. Because we've tried really hard not to come to this point.
Since I'm hearing what you're talking about, it seems like in your education experience for this position, you're really looking at an MIS or a computer science person more than simply a business degree. Because I'm hearing is that duties that are more managerial, administrative, would shift from Lucy to you, and some more of the more IT-type database duties might shift from you to the new person.
Yeah. Actually, he has both duties right now.
And you're doing a big supplement because of all his workload.
Right.
So that's why I was just looking at the education experience, and it seems like you're looking, like I said, MIS or...
Yeah, and that's in there.
Yeah, they're there. But that's probably where you're going to be looking more than looking for a general business degree, I would
assume.
Well,
and some that have a general business
They could, but
I mean,
have
that when you get
has some significant emphasis.
Yeah, we just put whatever would be an applicable coursework, different things.
I think I understand what you're trying to do. Does anybody else have questions?
Yeah.
think you kind of directed that conversation, so that's fine.
I want to compliment Lucy on putting in what I consider the best descriptive phrase in all of the requests for new personnel, and that would be the high-pitched whirring noise. Okay, it was the best description about I felt.
Okay, yeah, and it's just, you know, I've lost so many election workers, some to like just age and death, but others to just. They're fed up with the, used to come to the poll, used to open the book. If the person was in the book, they got to vote. You had one set of ballots. It was, you know, it was a nice day with your neighbors. And that's just not how elections are anymore. And we have a highly mobile population in Story County. I don't see that changing anytime soon. And we're also working with, you know, the whole precinct model is sort of like U.S. money. It's like really old-fashioned looking, but it's not going to change anytime soon. So the whole you have to vote at your neighborhood precinct. And I think the idea is that everybody that's working at the polls knows you, lives there, and can vouch for you. But that's just not how people live or operate anymore. It's still important as a way to divide people, because we have to do that by the census block. So people, they just don't like the fact that they can't go anywhere to cast the ballot. They don't understand, students don't understand that I don't have Minnesota ballots in my polling places, you know. So there's a lot of education that goes on there as well. It's a constant process, which accounts for the high-pitched whirring noise, I think. So
I thank everybody. The responsibilities of the auditor's office, as you pointed out, are we see elections, that's what the general public sees most. Here, you know, we see all the work that Lisa and her folks do, and Shelley and Christine. And as you pointed out, the real estate is the backbone here.
Right, that's like the secret there.
It is.
Also, that nobody likes drainage, but that's also in my office.
Oh, well, we try not to think about this.
Right, but
no,
yeah.
We value Scott a lot. He is very, very helpful. I didn't realize he had been drainage clerk for 26 years.
Yeah, next year, so this year, I think at next year's employee recognition breakfast in 2021, the auditor's office will be celebrating like 105 years of combined staff time.
Patty, Scott, and I are
25,
Scott's
30. Rhonda will be 15, and Christy will be 10.
Oh, my.
Oh. So, yeah.
That's, you know, in the institutional knowledge, they're
right.
Valuable, and that's something, yeah.
I worry that the four of us are all pretty close in age. What happens when everybody retires?
You start doing transition
planning. No, I know,
now.
Yeah.
Well, to be staggered.
Rhonda's younger than she.
If we
Rhonda looks younger than she is. Rhonda looks younger than she is, but yes.
Did I
say
that to the mic? I'm sorry.
We're not recording, are we?
Yes, we are.